Oh, hi, David.
Michael.
Yes, sir. Are we good? So are we good to go?
Anytime you are, I am.
All right. Well, sounds good. Well, here we go then. Hello, everybody, and welcome back once again to the Great Scott Podcast. Today, I am joined by legendary actor Mr. David McCollum. How's it going, David?
Let's start again.
Let's start again.
It's McCallum.
Oh, McCallum. I'm so sorry.
Not at all.
Yeah. So, first off, David, one thing I have to ask you, you're one of the healthiest people and age has been good to you. Do you have any secrets to staying so good looking when you grow up?
I would be immensely rich if I could answer that question. No, I mean, I've always been very, in the last latter years of my life, very careful to avoid stress.
That's a good thing, yeah.
Yeah.
How have you managed to avoid stress being in Hollywood? I know that that's one of the most stressful businesses
Well,
there is.
I spend as little time as possible in Hollywood because I am socially and every other way the antithesis of everything that is at the moment represented by Hollywood. I find it quite embarrassing sometimes to listen to them spouting all of their views and everything. And so I really, all my life, I've never really been a part of the Hollywood. I live in New York for one thing, which is a long way from Hollywood. But my life is, over the years, has been more the theater and doing the television shows when you fly in and do them and then you fly out. And even when I've been doing NCIS for the last 17 years, when I had a, I rented a little house or an apartment to begin with, I was pretty insular. I mean, people did come over and have dinner when invited, and but we didn't. I've never really been much of a social person when it comes to the rest of the Hollywood literati or glitterati or whatever they're called.
So you just fly into Hollywood to film and then go right back to New York?
Yeah, sometimes it's, it's 3 months. I mean, it depends. But even when I'm there, I'm not. I have friends, good friends there. But I'm not part of that Hollywood scene at
Yeah.
all.
Well, to go along with your Well, you're not only an accomplished actor, but I think that most people may not know this. You're also an accomplished musician. Music runs in the family for you.
Yes, I was going to be an oboe player. My father wanted me to go to Paris and study at the conservatoire. And I got through the Royal Academy of Music in London for a while. And for one performance, I was sort of put up into the senior orchestra. And I was completely lost because my abilities as an oboe player weren't anywhere near the quality of what those people were doing. And my heart really wasn't in it because by then I had been on a stage, I had played a little prince. Having his eyes put out by a terrible jailer with a red hot poker, a good Shakespeare play, King John, I believe. And the audience stood up and applauded at the end of it. I mean, how could it miss? But
Yeah.
and I realized that this is really where I wanted to be. And from that moment on, and I was probably 10, 11 years old when it happened, I have been part of the theater and not really part of music. My father was an accomplished musician. He was Sir Thomas Beecham's concertmaster with the London Philharmonic and the Royal Philharmonic. He was a great pal of Mantovani's and would tour America with Mantovani and, doing the odd Beatle record and worked in Paris with Marlene Dietrich and Burt Bacharach. He had a wonderful career. What's happened is his talent has jumped over me to my son Val, who is now the lead guitar for Jackson Brown, and he's one of the most accomplished guitar players in Hollywood, back to Hollywood, and works with everybody. I mean, he has a tremendous reputation as a guitar player.
Yeah, I was going to say you have a pretty accomplished son when it comes to music, with Val.
Yeah, Val's amazing, quite amazing.
Absolutely. So, so not only that, I mean, I do want to cover all of your amazing talent that you have, not only acting and music, but you've also written books to go along with it. And you had a novel that you just released called Once a Crooked Man.
Yes, yes, which did quite well. The only problem is whenever an actor writes a book, everybody thinks it's a biography and avoids it like the plague, except for a few close people who want to read it, usually family. But the book itself did very well. It made money for the publisher, which evidently is not always the case. They wanted me to write a second book, and I wrote a follow-up. It took me about 8 or 9 weeks to come up with the idea and write it down. And they were very, I don't know, the editor that I originally met with, a wonderful guy, he had gone and I was with a new person. And I just didn't hit it off with him. But, writing a book is a very individual, but at the same time, it's a creative process that you have to have the odd person to bounce off as you're writing it and working on it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Do.
Yeah,
and I just didn't have rapport with the people that I was working with, and of course that whole company, that book company, is completely gone now with the pandemic's taken about.
It's no longer
its history. So I wrote my book. Yes, I did that, which was great.
So let me ask you this. I know that I had asked you earlier what your secret was to your longevity here. Would you say that you might also credit that to you being so busy and staying busy through the years?
Oh, I think it's very necessary to keep the brain busy. Genes have a lot to do with it. My mother and my father, but mainly my mother, the dormant gene is a very strong one. And I think I was very lucky in that, which even when she was in her later years, she had good skin and she was active. But you have to be very proactive when it comes to longevity. You can't assume that it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You have to take care of your teeth and your hair and your feet and all the rest of it. Not unlike taking care of the car, you know, if you don't take care of a car, it doesn't work properly. And at the same time, I'm immensely lucky, or the harder I work, the luckier I get, in that I can afford wonderful medical attention in New York City. Whereas my brother and one of my uncles both went through the National Health in Britain, and it killed both of them because of just inefficiency. And just having the, you know, the wherewithal to have good medical attention is very important.
How are you doing health wise? Are you still pretty healthy? It seems like that your brain is still good.
I have very, very low cholesterol. My blood pressure is 124/75.
Oh,
and my weight's down as low as it's ever been. I think when I came to this country, I was 155, because you go through the selective service process for the army, and they write it on the piece of paper, and right now I'm 169, so I've gained 15 pounds the time I've been in the United States, which I think you grow old. And of course, my doctor now says to me, I don't treat you as a patient in the same way. What we do now is everything is age-related. That's how it all is, and that's what you got to do.
So when you're traveling, do you find that it's a little bit difficult to stay on a diet, like a strict diet, as opposed to, say, being at home?
I'm very simple in my eating habits. I can eat anything I want at any time. I avoid meals. So I rarely, breakfast, lunch, and dinner doesn't mean anything. When I'm hungry, I will eat. But, for breakfast, I'll have a hard-boiled egg and a half piece of toast, In other words, it's all to do with quantity. I mean, obviously, I don't eat steaks. I mean, I'm not eating a lot of red meat at all. And at the same time, just limiting the quantity that you eat. if you're going to have some wine, have a glass of wine. Don't have three glasses of wine.
There you go.
It keeps the calorie intake down. Your body, you're not worrying. If you want ice cream, have ice cream. But I can make a Dixie cup last for three meals.
Oh, nice.
You know, you get the pleasure of the ice cream and the taste, but you haven't jammed a whole lot of calories into you. And I think that is just, what is it called, Noom, this new diet that people are doing?
Yeah.
That it's really based on the same thing, except you use your iPhone and you write calories in. But I don't bother with any of that. I just keep the quantity down. And in that way, your entire metabolic system adjusts to that way of eating and that way of intake, that amount of intake, and it works really well.
So, David, my parents wanted me to ask you about The Man from U.N.C.L.E., because they remember you from The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and having been on a hit TV show like The Man from U.N.C.L.E., did you ever think you would be on another hit TV show such as NCIS?
Well, it's rather nice to be someone that's been on two of them in one lifetime.
That's rare. That's rare.
It's quite extraordinary. I mean, I give thanks to Don Belisario on a daily basis because he was the one that cast me as Ducky. And, you know, the financial rewards of having a long-running series have allowed me to do things for my children and grandchildren that I would never have been able to do otherwise.
Yeah.
And, we give thanks. So that's the main thing. And the other thing is, people often ask, did you ever think that one day you would? And I don't think I have ever done that. Because what's happening on a day-to-day basis to me? I'm one of the busiest people I know. I never sit still. I'm always doing projects. Before I left you right now, I had an extra sprinkler head put in the garden. And so I've been cleaning up all around that and making a trellis, which is going to go up on the wall. I've been cleaning out flower pots and making everything beautiful and
and
painting this. And when I hang up from you, I'm going to bake some bread. So, you know, just keep busy. I mean, you can't. And I don't think I've ever been bored in my life.
That's amazing. That's absolutely incredible. I'm definitely going to take your advice, David.
No, I'm not giving advice.
Yeah.
You're asking me questions, I'm giving you my answers.
Sure.
I prefer not to give advice.
Sure. So I know that another thing, I mean, I know that you went into acting, but your main goal wasn't exactly to be famous, I know. I mean, I know you just did it for the love of it, and then the fame just kind of happened.
Well, you don't know. I mean,
yeah.
Acting when I began, it's a matter of I moved out and I took a small apartment, a flat as it was, in London, in Archway, and then in Hampstead I moved. And the main thing was I had to earn enough money to pay the rent, and I had to earn enough money to be able to get on the bus and the train and get around and eat. And then when you get married, you suddenly have a wife who, you know, and then a child comes along. And it's a constant pressure to earn enough money to keep everything going.
It is.
And because the acting profession is dubious at best, and particularly in this country where you have a colossal unemployment, as the actors who actually are working don't work all the time. It's not an easy thing. So the early days of my life was always being concerned about, you know, how do I earn enough money to keep all this going?
Yeah. Would you say that has been the slipperiest part of your career, figuring out where the next paycheck was going to come from?
Well, it's inevitable because I was playing golf once with a very good friend who's an investment banker. He works in a bank. I don't know what he does there. But he's a money man. And he said, what are you doing? I said, well, I've been in place for the last, you know, 6 weeks off Broadway. And we closed on, last night. This is Sunday. Saturday night was the last performance. He He said, well, what are you doing on Monday? I said, I don't know. He said, well, what's your next job? I said, I have absolutely no idea. I don't know what it is or where it will come from. And he looked at me for a moment and he said, I'd kill myself. The concept to him of not having a permanent job that you knew you had and you came back to every day was to the point where he wanted to commit suicide if he didn't have it. But you adjust. You adjust.
Absolutely, absolutely. So do people call you Ducky wherever you go now?
Oh, Ducky or Ilya. Ilya still. Some very elderly people still call me Ilya.
Yeah. And it's and are you guys going to get ready to film again here, or are you looking at filming this year?
Oh yes, I've signed a contract to do a certain percentage of, depending how many they do, depending how much the pandemic at the end of the pandemic allows them. I'm also working with my son-in-law. We have an son. He's all part of the same company, and we have an app called Return to lifesafely.com with the number 2, and that's almost up and ready to launch. We have hotels interested, airlines interested, and particularly office buildings in New York who are very interested. And the difference between this particular app and other ones which are going to be on the market, this one tracks the facility as well as the people.
Oh, wow.
And doesn't interfere with anybody's privacy at the same time. It's a very well constructed, we've been working on it for weeks.
Wow.
It's based actually on an emergency program that was originally used by NATO for the last many years. So if they have a shooter in a building, they've already tracked who's in the building, where they are, how long they've been there.
That's pretty cool. That's amazing.
When you're actually going to take everybody out of the building in an emergency, you know when everybody is out of there because you've already, you know, tracked them coming in. And using that as a basis, we have this program, which I think is going to be very interesting and very useful. And if it works, I feel it will be contributing greatly.
Absolutely.
Getting this economy back on shape.
Now, having done NCIS for as long as you have you now learned more about forensics and medical examination than you ever thought you would?
I knew nothing about the human body other than probably what you do and other people, the layperson knows. I've seen many, many autopsies since doing it, doing the show, and quite some time ago, I actually was on the other side of the glass with the chief pathologist downtown, and we did an autopsy together. I didn't touch anything, but he did it as if he was teaching me, and it was one of the most miraculous moments of my life to actually see the human body and how it works and how it's all put together. So I have learned a great deal. Yes.
Yes.
They call me Dr. Dave around here. I think very much in jest. But at the same time, you do learn what kills people.
Yeah.
So you have a rough idea what to avoid. At the same time, I never knew nothing about law enforcement to the extent that I do. And so I was, in one day, I was at the NCIS headquarters in Washington. I also have a good friend who at that time was running the FBI, so I was able to go and spend the morning at the FBI. And in the afternoon, it was arranged for me to go to the White House and have dinner with President Bush and Mrs. Bush.
Wow.
So I had a sort of amazing day at NCIS, FBI, and the White House all in one day, courtesy of the people who I know and the family I know. So that was quite extraordinary, quite extraordinary.
So one thing that I think I've heard Mark Harmon say about the show is that you guys do still try to, I mean, every episode you try to stick to the original thing as much as possible. You make it look as real as possible, as much as, like, say, like a normal NCIS agent would have in their day if they were to be assigned on a case.
When I was there, yes, I did. And when I was the chief medical examiner, I was meticulous. It's not my purview anymore. It's all done by Brian Dietzen, who now plays Jimmy Palmer, who's the medical examiner. So how he runs that is entirely up to him.
Yeah,
it's interesting because in real life, when I asked the coroner, I said, you know, what are the rules in a autopsy suite? And he said, it's all up to the pathologists. They make their own rules and stick to them. There's no real laid down. I mean, obviously, the sort of basics, but it's up to the man who's in charge is the medical examiner.
So I have one.
But now I don't have anything to do with that at all. All I do now is talk to the writers before I go in because, you know, how Ducky is perceived and how we develop him and everything is something which I'm very interested in.
Would you say that this has been your favorite character that you've played throughout your career?
It's certainly the longest. When you've done it for 18 years, there's got to be a certain degree of familiarity and affection towards the character. It's also, you know, what we've created over the years by adding things here and adding things there. He's a very pretty well-rounded guy.
Yeah,
I have this strange dream in my mind that when I die, I will go to heaven and I will go into a very large ballroom. And in the ballroom, there'll be music playing, but it'll be filled with every single character I've ever played. And they will all be come up to me, and all will want to talk to me because every single one of them wants to criticize the way I did it. So it should be a fascinating
absolutely. Well, I have one more question for you, David, and I thank you so much for coming on the show, and I hope you come back sometime. But I know you said that you're not a man who likes giving advice, but there's a lot of people who want to like try to get into Hollywood themselves. So what would you tell them that want to look to get into Hollywood themselves?
There's two things. One is that lady who created Spanx, the underwear.
I
can't remember the exact quote, but it was the greatest risk in life is not taking enough risks. That's one thing which I think is something that everybody should have in the back of their minds. The other thing is have the courage of your convictions and don't let anybody detract you. I mean, you've got to decide as an individual. First of all, the most important person in the world to take care of is you.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to take care of Jack, because otherwise you can't take care of anybody else. Once you've done that, then you have to accept what it is you want to do in this world and then go for it without, you know, you don't let anybody stop you. You know, you'll get there. If you have the talent and the ability, you'll get there. But, you know, it's harder, and the only problem with Hollywood, apart from the politics, is the lack of you know, how much work there is. And particularly now, we've lost Broadway, we've lost so much. If you can become an investment banker, do it. It might pay better.
That's true. Well, David, thank you so much for your time, sir, and God bless you, and thank you again
thank
so
you.
Much for coming on.
And all the very best for everything you do.
Oh, you're very kind, David. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michael. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.